Ovo je test razumijevanja oslušanog teksta iz stranog jezika. Sastoji se od dva zadatka. Svaki snimak slušat ćete dva puta. Imaćete dovoljno vremena da pročitate pitanja prije nego što čujete tekst i da provjerite svoje odgovore. Dok slušate, možete upisivati svoje odgovore u test knjižicu. Poslije slušanja imaćete dva minuta da provjerite svoje odgovore. Prvi zadatak. Imate dva minuta da pročitate pitanja.
Collecting is a strange affliction. I have to admit to being a sufferer since childhood. Stamps, magazines that were numbered in sequence, bus tickets, coins, fossils, and advancing years have not really cured me. So today, for example, I collect books about New Guinea, and if I find one, no matter how boring it is, I'm likely to buy it for no better reason than that I don't have it. Where does this urge to collect come from? Some animals certainly collect objects, but all those that I can think of collect things that have a use. Caddisfly larvae collect tiny sticks or grains of sand with which to build the little tubes in which they live, and will collect coloured beads if you keep them in an aquarium and provide them with nothing else. Bowerbirds, the most spectacular collectors among birds, also assemble coloured objects, but that is in order to create a display that will impress females. Human beings, on the other hand, collect things that have no practical use, and often they don't even show them to anyone else, but keep them secret, hidden away in a back room. But why? It seems to me that the affliction, if it can be called that, is by and large more masculine than feminine. There have been, it's true, one or two spectacular women collectors, Lady Charlotte Schreiber, for example, who had a passion for little china figures of shepherds and shepherdesses and such like, and left thousands of them to the Victoria and Albert Museum. But that is nothing compared with Sir Thomas Phillips, who in the 19th century collected books in quite phenomenal numbers. Most of us, I dare say, are guilty of buying more books than we actually read. But he bought 40 or 50 a week, and by the end of his life had a collection of 40,000 books and 60,000 manuscripts. And certainly most active collectors I know, who scour shops, auctions and car boot sales for the objects to which they are addicted, are men, and men whose wives look at them with an affectionate, even pitying tolerance, when they spend yet more extravagant sums on something that is quite useless, but which appeals to them irresistibly, because they haven't got one like it. The male emphasis, I think, is an important clue. There can be little doubt that there was a division of labour between the sexes early in mankind's history. The long period the human infant needs before it's capable of even walking by itself, let alone finding food, meant that women, by and large, remained in camp or cave, and men went off hunting for meat for the family. So the hunting instinct, the delight in finding prey, tracking it and catching it, is deep-seated in men.
Imate 15 sekundi da provjerite svoje odgovore. Ovo je kraj prvog zadatka. Drugi zadatak. Imate 2 minuta da pročitate pitanja.
So what is it about the kite runner that makes it so beloved? The story opens in California, where the Afghan-born narrator Amir is happily settled, married and successful. But also we learn in flashback with a hidden core of childhood guilt. As a boy in Kabul, Amir is apparently privileged, the only son of a rich Pashtun Sunni Muslim businessman. His mother, however, died in childbirth. And convinced his father hates him, Amir grows up nervous and resentful. His only real friend is the Hazara Shia son of the family servant, a sweet-natured child called Hassan. But one day, when the two boys have just won a kite competition, Amir sees Hassan being horribly attacked, and instead of helping, walks away. A betrayal whose consequences multiply even after the Soviet invasion has driven Amir and his father to America. A quarter of a century later, however, with the Taliban now running Afghanistan, Amir gets a chance to redeem himself. And Khaled Hosseini, I wonder if you'd start just by reading from the beginning of the novel, when we're about to find out, I don't think we actually do quite in this reading, how that redemption might come about.
Okay. This is actually the opening words. December 2001. I became what I am today at the age of 12 on a frigid, overcast day in the winter of 1975. I remember the precise moment, crouching behind a crumbling mud wall, peeking into the alley near the frozen creek. That was a long time ago. But it's wrong what to say about the past I've learned, about how you can bury it, because the past claws its way out. And looking back now, I realized I've been peeking into that deserted alley for the last 26 years. One day last summer, my friend Rahim Khan called from Pakistan. He asked me to come see him. Standing in the kitchen with the receiver in my ear, I knew it wasn't just Rahim Khan on the line. It was my past of unatoned sins. After I hung up, I went for a long walk along Speckles Lake on the northern edge of Golden Gate Park. The early afternoon sun sparkled on the water where dozens of miniature boats sailed, propelled by a crisp breeze. And then I glanced up and saw a pair of kites, red with long blue tails, soaring in the sky. They danced high above the trees on the west end of the park, over the windmills, floating side by side like a pair of eyes looking down on San Francisco, the city I now call home. And suddenly, Hassan's voice whispered in my head, "For you, 1,000 times over. Hassan, the hair-lipped kite runner."
Imate 15 sekundi da provjerite svoje odgovore. Ovo je kraj drugog zadatka. Sada imate 2 minuta da pregledate svoje odgovore. Ovo je kraj testa razumijevanja odslušanog teksta.